From KUER.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. In December of 2009, Kevin Pierce was one of the best snowboarders in the world. It was New Year's Eve in Park City when, on the first practice run of the day, he caught a toe edge on his board and went down hard. Pierce suffered a traumatic brain injury. He spent months and months of rehabilitation. He suffered from seizures, memory loss, fatigue. He had a hard time paying attention. He could be petulant and impulsive, and he was determined to get back on the mountain. Naturally, his family was terrified of the idea. Today in the program, we're beginning our coverage of the Sundance Film Festival by profiling Lucy Walker's documentary that tells Kevin's story. The film is about the draw and the risk of extreme sports, but it's also about family and the joy and the limits of doing something you really love. The film is called The Crash Reel. Join us after the news. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. The half-pipe competition in professional snowboarding is a little like computer technology. There's a constant churn of innovation. It's always changing, and there's a lot of pressure to try and keep up. In the earliest days of the sport, the half-pipe was 6, maybe 8 feet. Today, they're 22 feet high, which means in competition, a boarder could potentially fall 45 feet at speeds approaching 30 miles per hour. And the tricks, they just keep getting more complicated and naturally more dangerous. On New Year's Eve 2009, Kevin Pierce was just up the road at the halfpipe on the Park City Mountain Resort. He was training for the Olympics that were just 49 days away. And on the first run of the day, he was going to try a double cork. Basically, it's two off-axis rotations or diagonal flips. It's difficult. Kevin Pierce was one of the best snowboarders in the world. At times, he was the best. And he moved into the final rotation of the trick, and he caught a toe edge on his board. And he fell face first, head first, into the hard snowpack. Kevin Pierce nearly died. And after months and months of intensive care and rehabilitation, he was left with seizures, with memory loss. He was often confused. He was fatigued. He had double vision. And that was just the physical part. It's hard to measure what his family went through, a close-knit bunch from Heartland, Vermont. Still, Kevin was determined to compete again, and Lucy Walker's new documentary explains why. The film is called The Crash Reel, and it's premiering at this year's Sundance Film Festival. Today in the program, we're live in Park City here at the Swanner Eco Center as we get our coverage of Sundance underway. We're profiling Lucy Walker's film, which explores the risks and the allure of extreme sports like snowboarding, but also it's a personal profile of a family. Lucy Walker is director and producer of The Crash Reel. It's her fifth Sundance film. Among her other documentaries, Wasteland and The Tsunami and the Cherry Blossom, both which earned her Oscar nominations. And Lucy Walker, welcome back. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you. Such a pleasure.
Kevin Pierce is with us as well, American snowboarder, an advocate for the National Down Syndrome Society and Love Your Brain. It's a new campaign to prevent traumatic brain injuries. And Kevin Pierce, welcome to you.
Thank you so much. Psyched to be here.
The world premiere of Lucy Walker's film, The Crash Reel, is this Friday evening in Salt Lake City, and we're going to give you the details about that as we go along. So, Lucy Walker, I want to start with kind of the question I ask a lot of filmmakers, and that is, how did you find this story? Like, what was the thing that drew your attention to this story?
Well, I had heard the news and read the New York Times about Kevin's injury, and I had been up at Park City for Sundance 2010. I was here with my film Wasteland, and everybody up on the mountain had stickers on their boards and helmets saying, "I ride for Kevin." And I realized that that was the kind of campaign of solidarity with Kevin. And it was very moving. There was a lot of kids who really were representing. But it wasn't until I met Kevin, which was that summer, I met Kevin and his brother Adam at a camp that Nike had organized for its action sports stars. And Kevin at that time was pretty soon after his accident. His eyes were not quite looking the same way. He was taking a lot of naps. He couldn't watch my film Wasteland because he couldn't read at that time. So he was definitely early days. But when I met him, my first thought was that he's a movie star. And what he's been through is so compelling, to go from the top of the sport to fighting for your life and having to pick yourself back up and relearn how to walk and talk. My first thought was, my goodness, this kid's a movie star. My second thought was, somebody should make this movie, my third thought was, oh my goodness, I want that to be me.
Yeah.
And it was just sort of so serendipitous. And that was it, really. I was just, it was, the light bulb came on and my next film had just hit me over the head, so to speak.
But wait, did you know what the film was? Just, oh, this is a great... I mean, did you know what it was going to be, or you just knew that there was something big in there?
No, it's taken shape a lot, but I really was struck by Kevin. I think when people see the movie, they'll see he's such an incredibly charismatic presence, and I think that his story really shows people how high the stakes are for these athletes. I don't know about you guys, but when I'm watching extreme sports, I'm torn, because part of me just thinks they're the most beautiful, amazing sports, and it's so dynamic. These sports are being invented, you know, in our generation, all these tricks are being invented. But the other reason I can't rip my eyes away is because you sort of worry what happens if it goes wrong, at least I do. Yeah. And so I think Kevin's story dramatizes quite how courageous, you know, and innovative these athletes truly are, because I think Kevin sort of had to pay that price, unfortunately. So I really thought, my gosh, the drama here, and I didn't know what was going to happen to him next, and I thought that's a journey too. How does a young man rebuild himself and find out who he is after having gone through such a thing? And I also thought it was a fantastically interesting world. I think it's great to make a movie in a world which audiences don't get to. I don't know about you, but I don't get to stand on the podium at the X Games myself in my real life. So I like a little aspirational, you know, excitement. I like to sort of find out, what is it like to be blind in Tibet, or a tsunami survivor in Japan, or a young Amish person seeing the outside world for the first time? My films, I think, all have given people a ticket to ride in a world that's really interesting, and nobody's really made a film about them before. And I don't think anyone's made a film like this in the action sports world before that really takes you inside and takes you on a really emotional journey with really getting to know the most amazing people that you can.
There's this moment in the film where Kevin's brother, I think it's Adam, he's talking about how Kevin really came into the sport when he was younger not really that worried about the competition part at first. That for Kevin at first, it was all about the joy of it. So Kevin, I wanted to ask you about that. Because this, we see this in the film a lot, you expressing this thing that sometimes it's hard for you to express, but you just kind of feel it, that you love it. How do you describe that joy that you get?
Yeah, you know, for me, it's always been, you know, really what snowboarding gives me. And it's not about winning these contests and winning all this money and that feeling, that, you know, that came and that was amazing, but really what got me there and got me to that level was just, you know, the feeling and the love that I get when I'm out there on the mountains. And, you know, it's just kind of, you know, the freedom that I have, and I'm just able to go out there and do whatever I want. You know, I did play other sports growing up, basketball, whatever, soccer and stuff, and I did really enjoy them, but it was like you'd always have a coach yelling at you and telling you what to do and how to do it, and it's like you get out there on your snowboard and there's no coach yelling down your back telling you how to do a 540. It's like you go off that jump and you can do whatever trick you want. And you can do it however you want to, and I was all about the self-expression, and, you know, I really think that's what drew me to it. Along with that is that I was really bad at school, and it was a way out.
Well, you say that jokingly, but that does come up in the film, that you have dyslexia, your father has, I think all your brothers have dyslexia, and you say that snowboarding was a way out. What do you mean by that?
Yeah, you know, for me it was like, it's so hard, I think, for so many people to understand that don't have a learning disability or, you know, one like dyslexia, just because of how hard school was for me and how much I really did hate it. And, you know, it's not like I really, my mom was able to get me a lot of help and support to get me through it, but it was like I'd sit in a math class and I would not understand a damn thing the math teacher was saying to me. And I would not, you know, it just didn't work with how my head works.
Yeah.
School doesn't work, but snowboarding does. And it's like snowboarding works so well for me. And I think that's really why, you know, I got so good at it and I was so driven.
Lucy, that is one thing I have to say I noticed about the film. And that is that on one hand, yes, you're dealing with the fact that this is a dangerous sport, that there's a risk involved. But I have to say, you didn't strip the joy out of the experience of snowboarding. And I wondered about that balance that you tried to draw.
Yeah, well, the it's tricky because I think Kev would be the first to say that, you know, given what he's been through, he might well have this reaction like, oh my goodness, I'm never going to do that again. But that's not his reaction, you know. And the film really follows Kevin and looks at things, I think, puts you in the feet, in the shoes of the athletes experiencing their passion for the sport and to progress the sport and the amazing amount that they get from the sport, as well as stepping back and asking questions. Are they protected? Are they insured? Are they, you know, the story can't help raising questions. Are we taking good enough care of our athletes that are so competitive and so good that they're going to be vying? So I think the film, I didn't want to make a message film. I don't make message films. I want to really make a story film and let the story raise its own messages and issues when they truly exist. And that's what I hope. It's really first and foremost about Kevin and his remarkable family, and also a couple of other amazing athletes. Sarah Burke and Sean White are also, I think, strong, have a strong presence in the movie that's very beautiful. So it's really mostly about their incredible journey. And I think everyone will be able to really relate to them and be very inspired by them.
Yeah. So, Kevin, we're going to talk about you for another minute, okay? So, because I think that behind your back, I mean, there's this moment in the film, and thankfully the Pierce family did what a lot of families do. I mean, they videotaped all kinds of moments in their lives, which you were really lucky. I mean, you had a lot of stuff to go through, I guess.
The lucky part, I mean, we weren't lucky that we had a lot of stuff to go through. We had like millions of hours. Oh my goodness, we had like terabytes. We had footage from three separate people called Florian in three different countries. We were getting footage. We got footage from 223 different people, I believe. So there was a lot. It's really kind of, I think, a new kind of a film, because I think in the new world that we live in, people are filmed. People have home movies on reasonable quality cameras. You know, in Kevin's world, you know, they're filmed on the slopes competing. They're filmed off the slopes a lot. And so we were able to piece together so much of the story is told through Verite footage. And so you get to see Kevin's physical transformation. We actually start the film when Kevin's 11 months old. Yeah. And we pretty much have footage between all the different places. And we pick up filming even more intensively after the accident. But what's amazing, I don't think you can get this in fiction films, because no matter how much, you know, Anne Hathaway goes on a diet and loses a little weight for whatever it is, you can't, that's a little bit of a physical transformation. But I tell you, watch Kevin Pierce go through this movie, because you see life happen in documentaries, and because there is this wealth of material. I want to single out, you know, Kevin's brother Adam and Kevin's friend Jack Matrani, both filmed particularly good pieces of the story, and you really see this journey that Kevin's been on unfold. You really see through 20 years of Kevin's life unfolding, and I think in future you'll have more movies like this that feel like they're kind of fly on the wall, but in so they're so dimensional, because you really you put the camera there. And as documentary filmmakers, I think that's the most powerful experience up on the big screen. You see, you get to experience life as other people are experiencing it, and it's the most profound thing I think we can do as human beings, is experience life through another person's experience.
You were talking about that shot of him at home when he was 11 months old. And he's always climbing around. He's trying to get to the top of something. And there's this moment where he climbs to the top of a high chair. He's standing on the tray of the high chair. Which raised the question for me. I'll just ask it to you, Kevin. What's your relationship with fear? Like, do you have... have you always been that way? Like, are you afraid of things? Are you not afraid of things? I mean, what's the fear part?
Yeah, you know, I think from a very young age, I was just kind of very active and very kind of wild and always going for it. And I just, you know, that was kind of almost my way out. And it was like, I don't know if it's fear, but it was like just that rush that it gave me. And I think it's what it makes me feel alive. And, you know, it's up there doing those double corks in the half pipe or jumping on top of high chairs when I'm 11 months old. It's like that really kind of brings me alive. And that's really what I kind of, you know, that's what gets me excited and gets me going. And it's like school. And, you know, I think most things that most kids, you know, get them excited and get them lit up just doesn't work for me. And that's what I found really kind of excites me and kind of gets me living.
Yeah. Lucy Walker, talk about this, because how did you think about dealing with seeing the accident, showing it? Do you know what I mean?
Well, we do. Somebody happened to be filming Kevin that day. Actually, there were several people filming, and we put together the whole scene of Kevin's crash from different people that were filming different pieces of it. One person actually happened to catch the exact run and the exact moment when his life changed. And what's funny when you're looking at a video of someone having a life-changing, near-fatal crash is, you know, it's video like any other moment. It doesn't even look, to be honest, like a very spectacularly bad crash. We got way worse crashes in this movie that Kevin even himself has taken. It doesn't look like it's going to kill somebody. But yeah, this is how life works, right? The things that look the worst don't necessarily be the worst. It's not like a spectacular moment in itself, but what's spectacular, I think, about it in terms of the power of the film to put the audience, you know, in this very dramatic position, is you can see how close he was to landing that trick and how his hands were and how his head were. And if everything had been a fraction different, you know, his life would have gone a different way. And I think for me, the most powerful thing about that is with bits of footage like that, you just think, my goodness, this is how life works. You know, we're so vulnerable, and just a split second changes the course of life, changes the course of everything. And to have that footage is remarkable.
Kevin, you've seen it, right? You've seen that part. We haven't seen the film, which we'll talk about, which is interesting, but you've seen that moment, right?
Yeah, I have seen the fall. And you know, right there, how Lucy says, you know, it got me thinking, like, how she says, you know, and I've thought about it a lot, like, how close I was to landing the trick, and what if I was turned another 90 degrees, and I had a little bit more speed, and I went a little bit bigger, and, you know, I just had that tiny little bit of extra time, this wouldn't have happened to me, and it's like, you know, it's just crazy to think about, like, what would have happened, but it's like, I try not to take myself there, and, you know, I try not to put myself in that place and think, you know, what if, because I have kind of with everything through this, it's like, you know, what if isn't going to help me. It's like, this happened and that's how I landed. So I need to move past that and, you know, continue on with my life and, you know, understand that was, you know, the risk I was taking and, you know, that's what happens sometimes.
So you don't think about whether or not, I mean, it doesn't make any sense to think too much about this, but you don't think about it that there was some sort of cosmic purpose or, I mean, like, there's this moment you're in Aspen and the half pipe in Aspen doesn't work. Sucks for you guys. Let's get out of here. Let's go to Park City. I mean, if the half pipe at Aspen had worked properly, you wouldn't even have gone to Park City.
Yeah, and actually, the guy that built that half pipe in Aspen is a good friend of mine. And after the crash and after I was kind of a little bit more with it and back alive, he felt really bad because he is one of the best in the world at making those half pipes, and he was kind of blaming on himself, but it's like, that's not his fault. It's like, that's how things were going that day, and you know, that's what happened. And it's like, you know, I just feel like that's how life rolls, and you got to just roll with it and make the most out of it.
Well, let's take a break. Kevin Pierce is with us, an American snowboarder, and of course the subject of Lucy Walker's new documentary film, The Crash Reel. Lucy Walker, she's an Oscar-nominated documentary filmmaker and producer. And we should mention that The Crash Reel premieres this Friday at 6:30 at the Rose Wagner Performing Arts Center in Salt Lake City. There's another screening that same evening at 9:30. Of course, all of this is part of the Sundance Film Festival. We need to take a break. We'll be back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're beginning our coverage of the Sundance Film Festival with the filmmaker Lucy Walker. Her latest documentary is the story of snowboarding champion Kevin Pierce, who's nearly killed in a training accident in Park City less than 2 months from the Winter Olympics. The film follows Kevin and his family as they deal with the consequences of a traumatic brain injury and this question, how much risk is too much? We're broadcasting live today from the Suano Eco Center in Park City. Lucy Walker's with us along with Kevin Pierce. So, Lucy, I just wanted to mention for a moment, you mentioned Shaun Waite, and I wanted to talk about, just briefly, sort of, because this is one of the storylines. It's this relationship, the friendship, and the kind of intense rivalry between Kevin and Shaun Waite, snowboarder. It's mostly friendly, but it is an important part of the film, the kind of, because I think it's what motivates these guys to keep pushing each other. Would you talk about that part of the film, the Shaun White relationship?
Yeah, Shaun graciously gave us a fantastic interview and really opened up as well. And I'm really glad about that because Shaun has dominated the sport since he was a kid. He went pro at 13 and has 2 gold medals. But there was this moment where Kev beat him and then started beating him regularly. And it was a really exciting time because these two incredible athletes got, I think, really were pushing each other going into the Vancouver Olympics. And Shaun had his sponsors build him a private half pipe to train so that nobody could see what tricks he was learning. And he decided to use a foam pit so he could get a soft landing. That was the first time that I think that had been used in snowboarding. But then, a totally different track, Kevin, on the other hand, he also had persuaded his sponsors to get him a half pipe, and he had decided that you could use an airbag to have a soft landing. So that these guys really trying to get these tricks down by landing into these bags, and that was the first time the airbags ever been used in the sport. And this new generation of tricks, the double corks where you flip twice, and I feel like it was a really thrilling time in the sport. It's probably a golden age in the sport where these two kids were really pushing each other. And the film sort of traces their sort of journeys, I think, from being childhood friends to being intense rivals to obviously having different course of events. And actually, right after Kevin's accident, Shaun had a very nasty crash as well at the X Games, and luckily was fine. But I think it haunts him too, that risk that that risk that they're all taking when they're at this level. So I think it's a really exciting part of the film to watch this sport sort of being progressed in front of your very eyes with these two incredibly bold young men.
Here's another moment from the film. This is Shaun White from the crash reel.
I went pro when I was 13 and everybody was in their like mid-20s. I was trying to like play Pokemons and stuff while everybody's out partying and I just didn't fit in. I met Kevin when I was about 9-10 years old at the US Open in Vermont. It was like this tradition. And it was myself, Kevin, and this was a basketball game that would take place. And it just became like our thing. Every single year we would all get together and just have a great time. We'd go to the candy store, sugar forms, we would do those things. I was always focused on Kevin, his brother, because I thought his brother was the one to beat at the time. Kevin just kind of came out of left field and did the younger brother move and became a better rider.
Yeah!
So they keep taking it up a notch. And I guess it's interesting because I'm not sure how much you want to say about the difference between Shaun White and Kevin Pierce, but you get a sense that one is solitary and driven, and one is more social. Like Shaun is the solitary figure who, this is my half pipe, I'm going to master this art. And Kevin was so much more, at least you get the sense, so much, I mean, driven for sure, but more late, there was a different sensibility almost that you get from the film.
Yeah, I think they have different styles. We can say that. I think we have different styles. And Shaun's just dominated. And I don't think he, likes to hang out so much with the people he's competing against. He's really focused and really driven and has a different style. He even doesn't practice in the same way. He just practices for a very small amount. He's also this amazing, skateboarder. Yeah. So he's just, just phenomenal. He's the Michael Phelps, I think, of action sports. Would you say that, Kev? And Kevin, on the other hand, has this incredibly delightful group of friends, and they call themselves the Friends, but they take the I out. They say there's no I in Friends. They spell Friends, F-R-E-N-D-S, and they are such a fun crew. We've had such fun editing them because they're hilarious, and they're always just goofing around. They're like the monkeys. They are. Right? Would you say that? And they're super fun, and they're always videoing each other, which is great for us. And you tell us about the difference between you and Shaun.
Yeah, you know, there's definitely a big difference, and I think it shows with the friends, having the whole friends crew that I have. And, you know, I feel like Sean goes about it in a whole different way, and, you know, I think that's one, you know, huge reason that he's so successful. But then at the same time, it's like, you know, for me, it's like, what's more important, winning these events and being the best, or, you know, having the best time and being with your friends? And for me, it was always, you know, it was much more important to be able to be with my friends and just have the time of my life. And it was like, you know, go back to what we were talking about before. I wasn't having the time of my life in school, and I was hating, you know, what I was doing. And so it was like, I found this with my friends, and I found this amazing opportunity here, and I just took it, and I was just thriving off it. And it was like, you're talking about those half pipes, and Sean went up and, you know, built this pipe up in Colorado, up in the mountains all by himself, and went and did it and didn't let anybody know about it. And, you know, I was there, and I got a half pipe made for me by Nike, and it was like one of those pipes up in the woods on its own. But, you know, instead of doing it by myself, I invited the whole friends crew to come with me and join in. And, you know, that's just where we're different. It's like, I'm all about, you know, being with my friends and having fun and just having the best time. And, you know, he definitely does it his way.
Yeah. Let's talk about the family, because this is an important part of the story. Simon and Pia, as Kevin's parents, his brothers Andrew and Adam and David, say something about that, if you would, Lucy Walker, because it becomes apparent pretty early on that they're very extraordinary people.
This is a special family. And one of the great joys is that you don't just get an incredible movie star in Kevin and an incredible sports in the snowboarding, but you get to meet, you know, my favorite family ever, basically. And I think oftentimes when we're watching movies and documentaries, you see kind of dysfunctional people. This family is the opposite. This family is the most functional family ever, but they've got some real challenges. Kevin's, you know, accident was incredibly harrowing and challenging, and Kevin's brother David has Down syndrome. And I think David, actually, sorry, Kevin, but I think David's going to be a little bit the secret hit of Sundance Film Festival, because David is the most eloquent,
yeah,
heartwarming, endearing, tremendously impressive young man. And I think that tells you a lot about how the family operates. And Kevin's parents are just a joy. People keep saying, what's the hardest thing about this, making this movie? And I keep saying, oh my goodness, the hardest thing is, I'm going to, you know, the hardest thing is I won't ever have it as easy as this movie, because it's been such a joy to hang out with this family. Kevin's dad is Simon Pierce. People may have heard of him. He's this incredible glass blower. Yeah. And he's very famous and makes these incredible artisan fresh blown glass, and is very successful business. And his mum, Pia, is just a remarkable mom. I think there's a kind of a model for how to raise kids. And I think just watching the family operate and meet the challenges is a really profoundly inspiring and moving part of the film.
Here's another moment in the film. This is after the accident. And you get us, Pia and Simon here are talking about trying to prepare for the fact, as you'll hear from Simon, that things have changed for their son from the film, the crash reel.
I remember the doctor saying, do you want to come see the scans? Like, so we sat down in the middle of the night looking at these computer images that really didn't mean anything.
We had no idea what was going to happen, whether he was going to live or die, or if he did live, what would his life be like. I would constantly watch the drip, which monitored the pressure in his brain. And, you know, the doctors had said if the fluid is clearer, it's better. And I would just, for weeks, just watch that fluid. I think it was an email from somebody saying, you need to be prepared for the Kevin who comes back not to be the same Kevin.
Kevin, how do you react to that? The idea that... Were you different? I mean, physically you were different, but did it change, you know, did it... I think that comes up for me time and time again in the film. Did it change your identity? Did it really change who you were?
Yeah, that was heavy. Whoa, I haven't seen that yet. That one, that one gives me the shivers right there. And, you know, that's a hard question to answer, because it's like, this injury is like so, you know, unbelievable and so hard to explain, because it's like, you know, I think I haven't seen the film, as you were saying, but it's like, I think it'll show very well what goes on with me in the film, but like, I just can't tell what's going on with me, and I don't know how I am doing. And it's like, you know, I feel like obviously my family's been there so close, so they know so well about me, but at the same time, it's like, I have no idea about me. So it's like, I can't even, you know, I don't feel like I can answer that question correctly, because I don't feel like I know well enough. And I did think I did know well enough for a long, long time, but it's like, I think you'll see in the film, I had no idea what was going on.
Yeah. There's another moment I want to play where it just gives you a sense of the transformation, the physical transformation, because we go from seeing him on the half pipe, joyous, climbing around as a kid, and then we come to this moment, and we'll see, among other people, Adam, his brother. Again, another moment from the crash reel.
We were like, yes, like, he moved his hand, you know, and then he'd open his eyes. But you could tell, like, he'd open his eyes, but it was as if he wasn't even looking at you.
How you doing?
And then he would pinch with his right hand, but his left hand wouldn't work. So then we were like, you know, is he paralyzed? And then he'd get a blood clot in his arm, you know, so it was just constantly new hurdles to get over.
There's very little change, and then after that, it felt like there was like this amazing ladder of progression.
He still wasn't talking, but I would play a few of his favorite playlists, and then I played The Believer by Neil Young, and he started mouthing the lyrics. We were like, yes, like, he's somewhat aware of what's happening, like, he's able to sing this song, which we didn't even know he was listening to.
So I don't want to give too much away, but Lucy Walker, we have to talk about how Kevin was thinking about, as you hear, what's happening to him. And as you just said, he didn't really have a clue at first. And there were moments like, he's at the Craig Hospital in Inglewood, Colorado, where he's doing his physical therapy in his rehab. And he makes this toast to the staff there. Well, let me play this moment again from the movie, and then have you react to it, because it's kind of remarkable in many ways, as we'll see.
But I would just like to toast how much better than I have gotten, and how much everybody has helped me in here, and how amazing the progress has been.
Kevin, that was excellent. I think pretty much just your toast just shows the progress you've made.
Okay, so moving forward, how hard do you see that I can hit my head?
You must really like it here if you want to come back.
Okay, for those who couldn't hear on the radio audience as well, Kevin has just been through all of this, and he's saying, all right, how hard can I, which of course implies what, Lucy, that he's...
He wants to get back on a snowboard.
Yeah.
And, you know, the amazing thing about, I think, Kevin's recovery was, he was so driven, and as he says at a different moment in the movie, you know, he thought he was going to be able to get back in time to go to the Olympics, and he didn't realize, you know, quite how impossible that was going to be, and how, you know, quite how many physical challenges he had in his way before he could even get, it was 2 years before he could get back on a snowboard at all to go down the mountain, taking turns. So, but I think that snowboarding really motivated Kevin. So the idea of getting back on the snowboard was actually fantastic, because I think that it gave Kevin a real goal. But the trouble is that, you should talk about this, Kevin, but the trouble with Kevin's injury is that it's very dangerous if he hits his head again.
Yeah.
And so everyone is very worried that even a small hit to his head could be much more catastrophic than for you or me. And it's actually very common for people that have had a severe traumatic brain injury to hit their head again. You'd think if you had one, you know, it's like getting struck by lightning, right? You shouldn't get unlucky again. But actually, you're at least six times more likely, they say, to get another one, because you often are a little bit impaired in your abilities, but you're not making an adjustment for that. It's very typical to overestimate your abilities coming out of a brain injury. And so Kevin was very keen to get back on a snowboard. support. And then his family had to go through this very dramatic quandary of, do they let him? Is this, you know, how self-aware is he in making that decision? And it becomes very difficult to navigate what is safe. How do you manage, you know, what is risky behavior moving forward, I think was a huge part of Kevin's recovery.
How were you thinking about that all at the time? Was it just that your brain wasn't clear, that your thinking was a little cloudy, or was this a kind of a mindset? Do you know what I mean? Or I guess you answered it. It's hard for you to say at this point.
My brain was definitely cloudy. I definitely didn't really know what was going on. But then at the same time, I did know that I wanted to get back on a snowboard. And I think that kind of, you know, really just gets back to it. And, you know, it really kind of shows and tells you what snowboarding was for me and what it still is for me. And, you know, I think that kind of really comes through in the movie. And you can really kind of see what it has done for me and kind of how it shaped my life.
The relationship part with your family, that is where it gets really difficult. Here's another moment from the film. I have to say, Kevin gets pretty petulant at times. I mean, he's insistent. The family is terrified about the fact that he may get back on there. Here's a moment where, and maybe you can set this up for us, Lucy, where he's at home with his family, and Adam asks him the pretty obvious question, well, what if you catch a toe edge? I mean, I guess they had these conversations all the time, asking, Kevin, what are you thinking, right?
Yeah, this conversation is dinner around the dining table, just about 7 months after the accident. And Kevin announces that he's ready to start snowboarding again that season. So he wants to start getting on it. And his family are trying to figure out how to react. And his brother, actually, Adam, is a fantastic snowboarder as well and was very involved in Kevin's both early years. They trained together, and then recovery. Adam actually took a year off and really helped Kevin with his rehab. So was very aware of how Kevin was, perhaps more aware even than Kevin was at that time. But of course, for Kevin, it was just every moment he was on a snowboard was a moment wasted, and he couldn't figure out if the family was being overprotective. Is that fair to say, Kevin? So,
yeah, you know, I definitely thought they were overprotective, but I also didn't know what I was thinking.
Right.
So who knows if I was right?
All right, I feel like I'm going to be doing a lot of snowboarding this season.
What happens if you just catch a toe edge? I think that in a stage where you're recovering and your brain isn't at a place where it can tell you what the right decision isn't, it's good to take advice from a family.
How long am I going to take this advice for?
I don't know.
How much am I going to have to take this advice for until you guys will just let me do my thing and trust me? I feel like there's no trust in this family. What you guys think I can do.
You look at it as trust, and we look at it as risk, and they're very, very different, Kevin. If you do it yourself, is it fair on your mother?
Hey, I know you haven't seen the... We've got the crowd reacting to the scene. I know you haven't seen the film. Have you seen this moment before?
Yeah, I did see that moment. That was in a teaser these guys put together.
Wow, how do you feel about that?
It's weird to see that now, and you know, I definitely kind of feel like I was almost, you know, I think it was very good what my family did and how they protected me, but at times, as you can see there, I felt like it was a little too much, and you know, I think they did it because I didn't really know what I was thinking and what I could do. But then at the same time, I think that it was maybe a little too much, but I think it's better to have too much than too little. But I mean, that, you know, what I have to say before we jump off air is just kind of what the family has done, and kind of, you know, I think that how they've been there is the reason that I am here, how I am doing today. And, you know, they don't like to take credit for it, and they like to say, oh, it's because all the work you've done and how hard you've worked. And it's definitely been a long, long, hard road, but, you know, they have been there. It was the first month and a half in the critical care right down the road in the University of Utah, and they were talking about how they slept on the floor. They didn't leave my side once for a month and a half. There was somebody in the family in the room with me. And then you heard my dad saying that he watched the blood drip and the fluid they drained just the entire time for weeks on end. So it was like them being there and having their support, I think, is, you know, one of the biggest reasons. And things like that, not letting me do the stupid things, is what kind of has saved me, I feel like.
Kevin Pierce is with us, an American snowboarder, an advocate for the National Down Syndrome Society, and the new project called Love Your Brain, a campaign to prevent traumatic brain injuries. Lucy Walker, of course, with us. Her new documentary film is called The Crash Reel. It premieres at this year's Sundance Film Festival this Friday evening at 6:30 at the Rose Wagner Performing Arts Center in Salt Lake City. There's another screening at 9:30. And Lucy, there are a few more in Park City?
Yeah, there's one Tuesday evening, next Tuesday, 9 p.m. at the Salt Lake City Library. And there's another one they just added. So there are tickets available for that one. And that's Friday at 3 at the Rose Wagner. And there's also screenings in Ogden on Friday and in Park City throughout the festival. So we've got a lot of screenings. So please, everybody listening, come to Sundance Film Festival, meet Kevin and his whole family and the Friends crew, and we're going to have some great screenings, so please come along.
We'll put all of that on our website, by the way. We need to take a break. We'll be back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Back now, we're in the Suano Eco Center in Park City. Back now with Lucy Walker and with Kevin Pierce. We're talking about Lucy Walker's film, which is premiering at the Sundance Film Festival, called The Crash Reel. All right, so you mentioned David Pierce, who has Down syndrome. This is Kevin's older brother. When you were first doing all of this, did you know that he... that David would become such a star of the film, that he would become play such a role?
I thought, after I first met Kevin, we chatted a lot, and I was sort of turning over in my head what the film might be. And there were lots of things that I thought were very strong, including that there was a lot of footage that had been shot, and including the fact that he seemed to have this remarkable family. And I thought it was really interesting for Kevin to have a brother with Down syndrome and for him now to be challenged with a traumatic brain injury. I thought it was sort of really wonderful to see how that relationship might play out. But I have to say that David surpassed even my wildest hopes. I mean, I just think that he's just an exceptional young man, and I can't wait for audiences to meet him. I think they're going to be blown away by his eloquence.
Well, let's show up just a clip here so people do get a sense of David, because he is really remarkable. And one of the things that he talks about here is his own, Lucy Walker's own sort of reaction to his Down syndrome. It's a big part of the film. I don't want to give too much away about it, but here's David Pierce, Kevin's brother.
My name is David C. Pierce. I have a disability called Down syndrome, but some people call it up syndrome because I am up kind of guy. The first question about my disability that I want to say is that I don't like it. I hate it. Yeah, I don't like it. I hate it. I want my disability to go away, not come back. I know that I have it. It's really hard to have it. Sometimes I feel stressed out about it, and sometimes I feel anxiety about it too. I just go up in my room, I hang out there, I cry sometimes. And I book up, kinda come downstairs, can move on, and have a day.
He has a kind of wisdom that is remarkable in the sense that he says the thing that everyone else is thinking. And he plays a really incredible role in all of it.
It's great in the movies when you've got somebody in the scene that's just going to go straight in and say what everyone's thinking. It's a great thing for a documentary filmmaker. And what's amazing about that scene, I mean, I feel like it's very moving to hear him talk about his struggle with accepting his Down syndrome. But I feel like people should fear not, because that is not the last we've heard about David and his Down syndrome. There's a whole arc that he takes too, inspired by Kevin. And the ending scene in the movie is, I don't want to give it away, I'm just going to say, bring a handkerchief. That's all.
Kevin, would you talk about David just and your relationship and how David's thinking about all of this, how that influenced the way you were thinking about all of this?
Yeah, you know, it's crazy that you bring that up, just because it's changed so much for me and Dave. And you know, before I got injured, we weren't all that close, and I mean, we definitely got along really well and we'd hang out, but now it's almost like we're best friends, and when we hang out, it's like we're the closest I've ever been with him. And it's just wild how hard this hit him. And you know, I never understood it when I was in the hospital or when I came out, until you know, I started to get home and started hanging out with him again. And it's just amazing kind of how hard this was on him and how much he really did understand what was going on, and you know, how much he cares. And you know, it really shows, you know, how amazing he is for just, you know, how much he cares about me. And you know, I think that, you know, we're a lot alike now, and it's like part of where I hit my brain has affected my filter, and I'm very, you know, willing to say what's on my mind, and Dave's on the same page. And I think it just kind of really helps us get along, because we're willing to say whatever we're feeling.
I feel uneasy, Lucy Walker, about giving too much away, but...
Oh, go for it.
There's a moment. I won't, I promise. I want to talk about a moment in the film, and I want to play this clip with Trevor Rhoda, who was an extreme snowboarder as well, and he suffers two traumatic brain injuries. And there's this moment where Kevin is interacting with him, and it seems to have a big impact on the way Kevin was thinking about... Because Kevin is insistent that he's going to get back out there. And then he starts to have conversations with people. There are a few of these in the film where he sees them, and it seems to give him some sense of himself. Do you want to set this moment up with Trevor Rhoda?
Gosh, yeah. Trevor was an amazing snowboarder who had two very unfortunate brain injuries. And with that second one, the results were very significant. He's got a lot of paralysis, and... he has is it aphasia? I'm spacing out on the name. I'm forgetting the name for when you forget things. But I think it's aphasia when you get words mixed up. You the sort of things that are a little off. And but he looks kind of normal, and he can say a lot of phrases that seem kind of normal. So it's a really shocking, invisible injury. And when you look at him, you think, hey, Trevor, you're doing great. And then... as his mom sets up, actually, it's important to understand that these brain injuries can be really misleading, and you can't tell just by looking at somebody quite what kind of problems they might be experiencing.
Do a little exercise with you. Okay, Trevor, touch your elbow. Where's your elbow? Can you touch it on your other side? Point to just your elbow.
Elbow?
Yeah, just your elbow.
This one?
Okay. So there are certain things that are a little off. For instance, the other day, Trevor, Alyssa, and Peyton, who's Trevor's 12-year-old brother, they all went golfing. And they got a golf cart because, of course, Trevor has a hard time walking. And all of a sudden, Peyton looks up and says, Trevor, are you trying to run me over? Snap. No control of impulses. And Trevor ran Peyton over on the golf course.
Directly over?
Here's Peyton, here's the golf course. Whipped him down and ran over. The entire golf cart was over. And the craziest was is that Trevor's facial expression was just like, yeah. Yeah.
Just like, yeah. It was pretty funny. Yeah. It was classic. Just running over your brother's golf cart. Just like cruising right over him.
Yeah.
brain injuries are pretty crazy in the sense that, it's totally, totally invisible.
How much influence did that moment or seeing people like Trevor have on the way you were thinking about what was happening to you? Because we didn't see this moment in the film, but you kind of scold him. You say, dude, this is not funny. You can't treat your mom like this. So how much influence did stuff like that have on the way you were thinking about your situation?
Yeah, that was a heavy one. Whoa, that wasn't too long ago that Lucy and I and my mom and a couple of other of us went and saw Trevor, and that was definitely the heaviest, you know, interaction I've had with somebody else who's had a traumatic brain injury. I haven't met too many kids that have done it twice to themselves, and that was like gnarly. You saw right there, we were talking about him running over his younger brother, and he was sitting there laughing as his mom talked about it. Like, no idea that we were even talking about that. And that was like, that one hit me deep hanging out with him. I mean, we just got the morning with the mid, like a half a day with him, but it's like, it's so much more obvious to me now, you know, how people are. But, and I think he's very, very obvious. It's like a lot of kids, you can't tell when they're injured, their brain's injured, but Trevor, obviously, like, his brain got hit pretty hard to be in that kind of condition.
Well, and it seems like that's become a purpose of yours in some ways, to talk to people like that. Has that changed sort of, is that what you're about now in some ways, you know, talking to people like that?
Yeah, that's a huge one for me, just because it's like, us brain injured kids, we're so unaware. Like, we think we're totally fine. Like there's nothing wrong. It's like your brain doesn't want to give you the information that it's still injured. Even, you know, it makes you feel like you're fine and you can go out and do what you want to do. It's like Lucy was saying, I was in the hospital and I was like, I'm going to get back to the Olympics. I got to get out of here. I got to get back on my board. And it's like, I could barely walk. And my brain was telling me that I could get back on my snowboard. So it's almost like it's not his fault that that happened. And that's why, you know, my family has been so amazing and it's so incredible what they've been able to do, because it hasn't been easy to hold me back. And I can tell you, I've tried hard to get out there on my own and do my thing. But, you know, they've definitely kept me down and held me back, which is, now I can understand. And I feel like I'm well enough aware of it now that I can, after seeing things like Trevor, I can understand why they've been so strict.
Let me ask you this finally, because we're pretty much out of time. Can it ever be the same kind of joyful experience now with the risk of danger? I mean, is it still joyful?
Yeah, you know, that's what's incredible, is that it really is still joyful, and it's in such a different way. I just went up on a snowboard trip up to Canada, and there was something like 3 meters of snow or something. It was snowing every night, like a foot, and it was the most special trip I think I've ever been on in my life, or at least that I remember. And it's just like being in the snow, and it's like, now with my vision so messed up, like, it's not bad when I'm just in the powder and just like kind of, it's almost like you're floating. And it's just like, that's where I've realized that I need to take things. It's like the half pipe in the park and, you know, what I used to be doing, that's not for me anymore. And, you know, I need to move past that. And I think that's what's so hard for so many kids, is, you know, to understand that they need to change their life and switch what they were doing. But, you know, I'm aware of that, and I think that I can live an amazing life now doing it differently.
Kevin Pierce, American snowboarder, advocate for the National Down Syndrome Society and the new project, Love Your Brain. And Lucy Walker, her new documentary film, of course, is called The Crash Wheel. It premieres at the Sundance Film Festival here. There are a number of screenings. She mentioned a couple of them at that last break. We'll put them on our website. Lucy, congratulations.
Oh, well, thanks to you all. And listening to Kevin has just given me goosebumps, and I can't wait for audiences to see him in the movie, because as you've probably noticed if you've been listening to this, he's one special guy.
Kevin, thanks.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited for people to see this and what's going down.
Radio West is a production of KUER News. Our thanks to Sally Tauber of the Swanner Eco Center and to Geraldine Dreyfus of the Utah Film Center. Thanks to Stroh DeClaire and to Bob Nelson back at the KUER studios. Louis Downey directed our broadcast, the program produced by Elaine Clark and Benjamin Bombard. I'm Doug Fabrizio.